Yo, it's Garbled Twistery, y'all, and we just finished a series of splendid in-between election episodes, and you know what that means. It's about time we've moved back to our regularly scheduled election programming. Yay! We've reached the turn of the century, and it's about time we talked about the election of 1800, yeah? And it's gonna be a cage match, a four-person cage match between rivals who have wrestled before. Charlie C versus Johnny A versus Aaron B versus Tommy J. I said it's Charlie C versus Johnny A versus Aaron B versus Tommy J. And for this episode, the first candidate we're gonna check back in with is Charlie. Yup. Charlie Coltsworth Pickaninny is back in action, y'all. Yup. And we've talked about him before, so I think you know the drill. It's gonna be a rebroadcast. And if you just want to skip to the new stuff, you just have to start at the 8 minute and 59 second mark. Alright? Alright. Roll the tape. Who's on the menu today? A dude by the name of Charles Pickaninny. Oh, and the surname Pickaninny sounds exactly like what it is. A family of absurdly rich people who plant daffodils for a living. And Charles's family also has a real good track record of meddling in government affairs. His dad was the Chief Justice of South Carolina. His little brother ended up being the governor of South Carolina and a representative and a diplomat. His cousin also ended up being a governor of South Carolina and a senator and a diplomat. So yeah, suffice to say, the pickaninnies ain't no ninnies, all right. Anyways, as a wealthy family, they did what your typical wealthy American family does. They moved to freaking London. But I mean, the Pickaninnies didn't just move there to learn what the word posh means. No, they meant business. How so? Well, our Pickaninny's dad, who shares the same name, was in London because he was literally lobbying for South Carolina specifically. I mean, who would have thought South Carolinians liked Cadbury cream so much, am I right? And Father Charlie tossed our Charlie and his brother Tommy into
the Fancy Pants Westminster, a boarding school,
while the rest of the family moved back to South Carolina, effectively ditching the boys in boarding school and, essentially, following through with the threat you always hear being made to children in children's movies. I swear I'm gonna send you off to boarding school. So yeah, after that they went to Fancy Pantsy Oxford University, and our Charlie went to law school, and everybody liked him so much that they just basically told him he could be a lawyer without any strings attached. But then he decided botany was his thing after all, because that's what a pickaninny does, okay? So he went back to South Carolina and married some lady named Sarah, whose dad was the president of Continental Con or something. But yeah, she died pretty fast. So he married some lady named Mary, and apparently her family was a bunch of Madame Pomfrey planter people too. That's some cutest couple material. Bonus points, because he had three baby girls. But anyways, what was he doing back in South Carolina? You know, the usual aristocrat stuff. Studying law, being the local attorney general. Uh-oh, we hate England now. Looks like Pickaninny's gotta join the South Carolina Senate to help everybody be all independent or whatever. And of course, this whole hating England thing made everybody grab their guns, and Pickaninny's no exception. So he ended up becoming a freaking captain of Jorge's army, and on England's very first try to take South Carolina, he kicked them all in the tuchus. Successfully! So yeah, they let him be a colonel or whatever, and the tea sippers were literally scared of the South because of that battle, so they went up north to cause a ruckus there. And Pickaninny followed Jorge's peeps to Philly, and he got into some big fat gunfights at Brandywine and Germantown, and he made some new friends there as well. Friends like Alexander Hammy Tammy. And after all that mainstream battling, Pickaninny decided he ought to try and take the tiny piece of eastern Florida that the tea sippers took.
Wait, Florida?
Yeah. The British had a piece of Florida. Like 800 troops went up to General Howe and were all like, "It's too cold up here. Can we like conquer Florida or something? It'll just be a small piece, not Disney World, we promise." And Howe's response was like, Sure, okay, whatever. And they were successful, because the army waiting for them in East Florida was literally 1/4 their freaking size. Anyways, Piccadilly wanted to take it back, and he started traveling south, and he stopped because he realized traveling all the way with his troops was turning into a logistical freaking nightmare! Like a logistical nightmare comparable to planning a trip to Magic Kingdom with your brunch buddies. Yeah, I went there. So yeah, the T-Sippers wanted to try and tackle the South again, so Piccadilly ended up doing a Marvel team-up with Benny Lincoln to try and take back Savannah, Georgia from the stubby T-Sippin' T-Sippers. Unfortunately, this was an epic fail. Like 1,000 of the Patriots were either captured, hurt, or pushing daisies. And for the second issue of this Marvel team-up, Piccadilly was trying his best to help Benny Lincoln stop the T-Sippers from taking Charleston. As you may or may not remember from the Benjamin Lincoln episode, it didn't end well. In fact, it ended so horribly that Piccadilly was taken as a freaking prisoner of war. But maybe that was a good thing? Like, he was really good at being all motivational or whatever and made sure that the other prisoners stayed salty and mad at England and stuff. But, yeah, they let him go in the peace talks for starting and stuff. Now that the Revolutionary War's over, Charles Piccadilly decides to be a lawyer. And he's one of the best in South Carolina. And he becomes one of the elite politicians. No, really, though. Like, Piccadilly and his brother became some of the most powerful people in the South Carolina bean. And when his friend, Eddie Rutledge, brother of Johnny Rutledge, decided that this whole enslaving people thing was stupid, Piccadilly was all like, quote, "Money doesn't have morals, and neither should we, for the well-being of South Carolina's economy." I know. Ew. And he was also leading the whole Americans should have a right to re-kidnap their kidnapped Africans club at the freaking Constitutional Convention. And he was pushing really, really hard to put that unconstitutional nonsense in the Constitution, and it worked! There was a whole fugitive slave clause in the Constitution. Thanks a lot, Piccadilly. Thanks a lot. So yeah, this guy's kind of a snake. Like, remember how I just said South Carolina took us handed to it in the Revolution? Well, I feel like this is precisely why Piccadilly didn't like the Articles of Confederacy and wanted a super strong centralized government. Because he knows South Carolina sucks at wars, apparently, and wants to rope the other states into his failure next time. Oh, and he hated poor people having any power whatsoever. Like, he didn't like the idea of a popular vote, and he didn't like the idea of senators getting paychecks for their service because they should be wealthy on their own. And despite loving slavery, he did play a part in ending the crazy international Atlantic slave trade and stuff. I doubt this was a change of heart and more of a U.S. keeping its money, since money seems to be at the very core of Piccadilly's every legislative action. So Jorge Washington sees this guy and he's all like, quote, "We've been on the battlefield together. I trust you. You want a job in the State Department or the War Department?" Piccadilly said neither. 1796 comes around and Jorge's like, "Hey, you want to get paid to go to France?" And Piccadilly's like, "Absolutely, I love eating snails." So now it's off to France. Whee, baguettes. But you see, this new French ambassador job was not going to be a freaking walk in the park, okay? Like, the baguette people are being all resentful because of that freaking Jay Treaty that made us look like we were all buddy-buddy with the T-Sippers. And yeah, those T-Sippers and those baguettes were kind of firing guns at each other and stuff. Yeah, the baguette people were so rootin' tootin' mad at us that they literally sent the Navy. I know, right? Not the Navy! And they were, like, showing up on the U.S. trading ships and being all like, quote, "Are you trading with England? You look like you're trading with England. Put 'em up, put 'em up," unquote. So basically, the French were out here acting like the big mom pirates because we made a treaty with T-Land. Yeah, they were pretty mad. So on the first day of the job, when Charlie showed up and was all like, "Hi, everybody. I'm your new ambassador. See? Look at my shiny new badge." The baguettes responded like, quote, "We're in the middle of a war here, and you Yankees ain't loyal, so no, you're not our ambassador," unquote. This really rustled Charlie's pancakes, because come on now, they're just being petty. So he tells this to his new boss, the Prezi-Wezi, Johnny A, and they decide to resolve this petty conflict by forming a super cool and qualified team and talking about it over dinner. This team included some dude named Johnny Marshall, and some other dude they nicknamed Jerry with a G, and of course, Charlie. An accurate point of reference for this team would be the three Marine admirals from that Japanese pirate show that all the kids are watching. So they meet up at the Hog, which is like the fanciest sports bar in the Netherlands, and they met with the new baguette foreign relations guy. His name is Talleyrand. And those baguette people send a bunch of bums over right after this meeting to make some demands. No, really. Like, they demanded a loan, some bribes, a new car, ridiculous stuff, okay? And then this nonsense just got weirder and weirder, and Talleyrand, like, ended all official communication, but he was still trying to make these deals on the DL, and he knew that the U.S. political peeps were split up between hanging out with French people and hanging out with English people, and he was being all manipulative about that, and the three admirals didn't know how to freaking deal with all this shady business, but there was no other way to deal with France because they closed the official channels, and it just turned into a freaking hot mess, okay? Yeah, France was getting angrier and angrier, and the U.S. was getting angrier and angrier, and Piccaninny and Marshall just went home, but Jerry tried to, like, stay, to keep trying to, like, negotiate or whatever. I guess he's the Admiral Aokiji of the group, you feel me? Yeah, this PR disaster led to the U.S. going to war with France. Well, it wasn't declared, so I guess it was more of a quasi-war. Yeah, like, we're shooting cannons at each other and sinking ships, but it's not a priority, you feel me? But just in case it became a priority, Congress was all like, "Okay, I think we need to expand our army." And Johnny A, freaking Morse-coded Jorge Washington, all like, "Yo, I need you to lead the whole army again if this cow poop hits the fan." And Jorge was all like, "Fine, I'll do it. But only if you let Charlie be a general. Those cheese grit eaters in the South really like him. He'd make a great general, yeah." And all the other Federalists were okay with it, except for one teeny tiny issue. Alexander Hammy Tammy. This guy was second in command, and I think we both know how our buddy likes to meddle. But Charlie was all like, "Sure, whatever, I'll be a general, sounds like a good time." I mean, everybody thought he was going to refuse because of Hammy Tammy's reputammy, but he ain't petty like that, I guess. Good for you, Charlie. Anyway, how did the guy feel about slaves? I could summarize this in one sentence. He wanted to stop selling them on the market, but he didn't want to free them. Oh, and when the Bill of Rights was happening, he was all like, quote, "Are we really gonna sit here and say everyone's free while owning slaves? That seems a little tacky," unquote. He made a good point. He was just on the wrong side. Like, he would rather throw away the Bill of Rights than free the slaves because it exists. Yeah, yikes. So anyways, back in the 90s, he didn't like that everyone was forming cliques and taking sides, much like Jorge didn't like it. But when he came back from France, he was a straight-up Federalist. I mean, who wouldn't be after the baguette people gave you the back-alley run-around stopping you from doing your job right routine? So now he's a nominee for the Iron Throne. I'm gonna tell you why. A, he's not only a politics man, He's an army man, and everybody likes an army man. And B, Johnny Adams is trying to make some power moves on Tommy Jefferson, and Alexander Harry Tammy is trying to make some power moves on Johnny Adams, and Tommy Pickaninny running for president is somehow in the center of all this internal passive-aggressive hoo-ha that's been going on for well over 5 years at this point. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. I gotta end it here for suspense. Do-do-do-do. Suspense. If you've got something to say about this episode, about the podcast, or about, I don't know, why there was a toy called The Dog, you can find Garbled Twistery on Facebook and Twitter, or you can head to the garbledtwistery.net website and send a message in the contact section, or you can email moi. My email is Rafiq, that's R-A-F-I-Q, at garbledtwistery.net. Next time, it's candidate number two. You know him well. He's the current title holder. He's the crouching tiger, hidden fat man, Johnny Adams. How you doing?
This is the ending. I'm ending it now.
We're in the middle of war here, and you Yankees ain't loyal, so no, you're not our ambassador.